My name is Owen Flynn, and welcome to episode 115 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast. In this week's show, we talk to one of the most exciting young talents on the Irish mountain running scene. Jared Martin led the Irish team home in the European Championships last summer in the elite men's up and down race, and he is currently preparing for the World Championships in Spain in September. We'll chat through Jared's progress over the last few years and look at how he will prepare for the World Championships in 12 weeks' time. We also have Rennie Borg from Running Coach Ireland, who will be chatting to us about nutrition for our big trail races. Should it be carb-based? Should we be fat-adapted? Or should we be looking at a more periodized fueling approach? It's a fascinating topic that we can all take something from. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go. Hey guys, and what a fantastic result we have to kick off the show this week. And that is the superb 17th place in the men's race and over 40 victory for Ricky Wynn at the Western States 100 mile endurance run, the world's oldest and indeed a rightful challenger for the label of the most iconic trail race in the world. Ricky, congrats from everybody at the Trail Running Ireland team on a big, big performance. Ricky, what a race, what a result. And it was actually a really well executed race from Ricky as he moved from 21st to 17th over the final 20 miles. So to be able to move through the field like that shows how strong and prepared Ricky was. And thankfully, Ricky actually survived an encounter with a bear out on the course too, would you believe? So listen, safe travels home, Ricky, and best of luck with the rest and the recovery in the build-up for the World Championships in September. And just before we leave the results section of the show, well done also to David Ryan, who had a similar result to Ricky's with a 16th place at the La Sportiva Lavaredo 120k race by UTMB in Italy with 14 hours 20 minutes, just 6 minutes behind the legend that is Courtney Dowater, who won the women's race in 14 hours 40 minutes. Well done, Dave. Before we call in Rene, many thanks as always to our group of Patreons who support the show each episode with the price of a gel per month, €3 to €6. And a shout out to Karen Crean, who became a Patreon since our last episode. Really appreciate it, Karen. Thanks a mil. And if you would like to help out the podcast, do please head over to Patreon, Trail Running Ireland, when, if you have a moment over the next week or two, even just a small donation for €3 a month will help keep the show going all year round. Thanks a mil, guys. Okay, let's call in Rennie for our coaching slot. And this week we are talking fueling for the big trail races. Rennie Borg from Running Coach Ireland. Rennie, great to have you back for our fortnightly slot. And Rennie, we've got a fascinating subject today. It's something that I'm sure we've touched on a couple of times, but it is worth doing because there's always great opinion, great debate on it. And I think you've been listening to some of the global experts in the field over the last couple of weeks when they were having a round table discussion on it. Some lively debate back home in Ireland as well. And very simply, Rennie, carbs or fats, what should we be taking for our fueling in terms of performance? I'll let you maybe kick it off your side.
Yeah, so we did notice that there was a very interesting roundtable recently online by some big names in that particular community, like Phil Maffetone, Timothy Noakes, Paul Lowers, and that some people might know as well, wrote kind of like the Bible of modern Bible of interval training. And we'd noticed, maybe coincidentally or maybe because of that, there was a few kind of very, I don't know if we could say heated, but there was some lively debate online in the Irish trail running community where that kind of really exposed that there are quite polarized opinions on what constitutes, you know, optimal fueling, both for in the race situation itself and before. Yeah. So we thought, well, let's look into it. You know, let's look into all this fat adaptation, periodized fueling, latest scientific insights and the emergent ideas, you know, and see, can we resolve some of these contradictions and, you know, what might be the shape of the future of endurance nutrition.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, Manny, isn't it? With so much opinion and debate and, evidence-backed debate as well on both sides. Manny, what about, say, if we start off, say, with your own work over the last, decade plus 15 years working with your own athletes in Running Coach Ireland. What is your approach to this? And I know we're not nutritionists, so, we're not experts in it, but we do advise athletes, we work with athletes, we see athletes put their nutrition testing into action in the field with training results, race performance results. How do you go about it in Running Coach Ireland before you say you call in the cavalry and you might actually consult with a nutritionist? What are your own general guidelines that you use for your guys?
It's very similar to how we have a philosophy for our training, you know, that's very athlete-centered. So we don't use a single model, which we don't do for training either, you know, because athletes come from all backgrounds and there are different phases, of course, of training that have different demands on the body. So when you combine those two things, you know, what sort of training is going to be the focus? Where is the athlete at the moment? We have to adapt fueling based on that, you know, so based on the training phase, the physiology, the lifestyle the person has, and the goals that they have. So it basically means that nutrition is context dependent. It's not based on a dogma where you kind of become very hooked up on a particularly strategy or diet that has some kind of name, right? And there's so many names, you know, you could look up over the years. I won't even mention them here because I think they're getting so loaded. It'll become a little bit more apparent later in this talk here why, because this might sound a bit wishy-washy, I know, for people, but I think it'll become a little bit clearer when we get towards the end. What it is we are saying when we say that it has to be individualized based on the current state of your organism, you know, and this is why we see this contradiction a lot, where one person responds really well to one form and another to a different form of strategy, and then people can't figure out, well, which one should I choose?
Yeah, it sounds like maybe there's a time and place over the course of a year, over the course of a training block, where you might need, to make sure that you're using carbs. Or there might be a time over the course of a training block where it's okay to be doing some of your runs fasted. And I think maybe the term is periodized nutrition over the course of a season. What does that look like in practice, Rennie?
So it's simply like you adjust your fuel intake across the training cycle. So for instance, you know, lower carb in a base phase would promote more fat adaptation. So that means, and the work is low intensity, and you're not burning as much glycogen during that phase if you do it right. The metabolic stress is lower. Often as well, not always, but often the training takes place in winter. And in winter, your body is naturally more inclined towards a high fat metabolism on average. So it means there's a lot of things that could say, well, actually, this is the time of the year where we can actually get away with this and where it might actually aid the training. And then, you know, you might start to cycle on ramp carbs up, you could say, in a strategic way once you get into the specific and competitive phases where there's a lot more intensity and speed. And also, as I say, traditionally, but not always, you get the summer months, which, you know, for those who remember our podcasts on seasonal eating, your metabolism is actually geared up for mating, right? Because that's when mammals are meant to go out and hunt down their spouses and get busy and all this and propagate the next generation. And that the blue light of the summer makes us crave carbohydrates, which grow in summer, right? They don't grow in winter. So there's a reason you don't crave them in winter unless there's a, what, you know, what we call a circadian mismatch, as in you're not getting all the natural signals. So there's a lot of things there. So it could suit both the training needs under normal circumstances and also the actual time of year. And it then allows you as well to be more metabolically flexible because you're not hammering your body nutritionally the same way the whole year. You're actually changing things up a little bit.
Yeah, so maybe in that base phase when you're doing lots of our zone one, zone two work, our aerobic type work, that's maybe an opportunity to do some of those maybe 1 hour runs fasted. You might even go up to maybe 90 minutes, 1 hour 45 fasted. But then when you're coming into the more intense work in that pre-competition phase, in that competition phase, especially when I think as well, if you're training for the shorter races. Now maybe we can talk about the ultras in a couple of moments, but certainly for the shorter races, it probably is maybe wise to make sure that you are properly fueled for short hill reps or for your short 40-minute, in races on a Wednesday night or a Saturday morning over those summer months.
Yeah, so it depends a little bit on priorities, right? That's why you see with the, or immediate priorities, I should say. That's why you see with cyclists a lot, even if they're, say, sprinters in the Tour de France, where they need a really, really high power output by the time they get to the, or the spring classics or something like that, where it's all decided by your finishing power. If you just did the this sort of, fat adapted metabolism, you would probably lack that top end speed, right? There's a lot to suggest that you couldn't have your peak sprint power with that. But a lot of them still use a high fat, low carb diet in winter, and they use that for different reasons. That, for instance, as you noted yourself, Owen, and I know you'll talk about it later, you lose weight really, really quickly like that. So it's a great way to get rid of the puppy fat and the winter fat or the Christmas belly and whatever else. But also, when you periodize it, any negative effects on your particular high intensity exercise, they can be undone if you just cycle off. And it's a little bit the same as with training, right? If you only do slow training, you would also lose your top end speed. But if you cycle back very intensely in time, let's say 6 weeks out or something, you might have it well back by the time you need it. So it's really all about timing once again, and not just being stuck in one way of doing things or eating 365 days a year.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, René, they love their big trail races. A lot of them are probably planning for 50K plus races, 80K plus, 100K plus even. And I'm sure they've heard of the term fat adaptation and read articles and listened to people talking about how important that is, especially when we are an ultra trail runner. Do you have any thoughts, René, on first of all, is it a valid approach to take? And then maybe secondly, how long would that fat adaptation take place? How long is needed before you will see the benefit and be able to do those longer runs without that much carb fueling?
But those who have used the approach successfully and those who are kind of proponents of it, they will say minimum 3 to 6 weeks, right? But Barry Murray, for instance, who's a good friend of mine and some people listening might know, he says up to 2 years, right? And for instance, he lived it and had reasonably good success with it. He won three major Irish Ultras in 1 year. I think there was Mourne, Wicklow Way, Kerry Way, and with just the fat adapted approach and barely anything during the races. And he was one of the proponents saying 6 to 24 months is more realistic. But he would also have been the first to say that it's much more than about switching your fuel across. If that's the way you want to go, you have to change the way your mitochondria work, you have to change the way your hormones react, your gut function. And there's a whole lifestyle element to that. And there's certain lifestyles that are not suited to that adaptation. So it's a strong theory with some good observational evidence, but there's a lot to contradict it as well. I think we can resolve that at the end of it. But it's definitely not, it doesn't look like it is. Even if we say it could be for everybody, it's not for everybody in all circumstances. And it may be that there are some people it just would never work for in any circumstance.
Yeah, sure. And I know Ian Keith, who is a great friend of the show. I mean, he thinks similar, I think, to Barry Murray as well. And I remember when we interviewed him for the podcast, René, I'm sure the listeners remember this anecdote. He spoke about how when I think the last time maybe he raced over in Chamonix, Mont Blanc and UTMB, I think he got on the Masters podium, if my memory serves me correctly. He didn't have anything or very, very little in that UTMB performance, apart from Snickers over the last couple of kilometers because he was simply bored and he was looking for something to pass the time. So there's another example. But what if Barry and Ian were in front of me now, what I'd probably say to them is, but lads, have you tested the ultra running? Have you tested maybe carb fueling to see if the result would be any worse, would be the same, or would be better if you did take on gels over the course of those, national winning performances from Barry and maybe Ian and the ultra races as well. They did work for them, but it's only a sample of one. And I wonder that if they had tried carbs, would those performances have been any better? Because maybe that's the next question that I might ask when he is that we do see a lot of elite athletes who are the opposite of Barry and Ian, and who do high carb fuel over the course of UTMB, etc. And that works very well for them.
Yeah, and the thing with performance at an elite level is that if something doesn't work, elites usually drop it. You know, it's because it's so ruthless. But that is, you know, as a general observation, there are exceptions to that as well, because obviously we know if we look back at the history of all sports, there were many poor practices that were sustained for very long periods of time, you know, to near superstitious levels. So we can't totally discount that elites can adopt things that maybe it's just a placebo, right? That's the only real reason it works. But there is one thing that we have to remember with elites and very well-trained individuals is that they're already fat adapted just from the pure volume of training.
Yeah.
So the carbs that they use come on top of a really high level of metabolic flexibility. So it doesn't actually have to be either or. And also, as we know, a lot of the elites that might use very high carb strategies in races may still in winter do a lot of fat adaptation. You know, there's a few, I think, for instance, Kilian Jornet would be a lot like that, if I remember right. So it's not quite so simple as that dichotomy, but obviously it would be really interesting if you could take people who'd fat adapted for a long time, like say Barry and Keith, and if you could have done the same race on the same day with two different fueling strategies. You know, it would have been great, because until then it is kind of a little bit unresolvable. Because we don't have proper controls either way.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm sure the lads will say as well that if you are dependent on carbs for your training, and even over the course of a 24-hour period, Rennie, if you're just eating carbs all day, which I think a lot of runners do end up doing because, you know, they're constantly preparing for their next session and we can over-rely on carbs, is there a downside to consistently relying on carbs?
Yeah, there's a huge one, right? And it's the same downside that we see in so many of the health issues we see in the modern world now, which is that the over-reliance on an over-consumption of processed carbohydrates, especially, leads to a lot of problems, especially once you enter middle age. You get away with an awful lot until then. But over years of using too many or eating too many processed carbohydrates, you could get insulin resistance, which obviously is rampant at the moment. Some people call it metabolic syndrome. It obviously leads to, I think it's type 2 diabetes, gut issues, or chronic metabolic stress, right? So the system we have is actually, it's evolved to handle carbs occasionally, not all the time. Now, some people will say, no, hang on a minute, you know, we evolved in the Rift Valley in Kenya. You know, that's certainly the prevailing idea, which would have probably fruit at least year round because it's at the equator. If we go with that, then yes, but that's very different from eating the sort of carbs we eat now every day, especially, you know, processed grains and all the fake sugars and all the rest, which, for instance, you know, that's a problem if you rely heavily in your sport on powders and gels and all these sort of things. That can add up a lot over a 15, 20 year career. So it's no wonder if certain athletes feel that their guts are run through or that they have issues with blood sugar regulation or other health issues. You know, that could be from chronic overuse of carbohydrates, which then we could say, well, it's such a simple fix to, even if you believe that you absolutely need it, just cycle it out sometimes. You know, cycle it out when you don't need that high-end power as urgently.
Yeah, and it goes back, I suppose, to mindset and belief, doesn't it? And maybe in terms of your external environment, if you are used to taking carbohydrates on board all throughout the day, and sometimes it's stress-related, Rennie, as well, isn't it? Like, you know, we go for a cup of tea and a couple of biscuits to help us get us through the afternoon of a stressful day in work, or maybe late at night, the kids are driving us mad and we go for a little, I don't know, plate of cake or cereals or something just to help calm us down. So it's mindset, it's belief, it's environment that can impact the choices that we make and even how the food that we intake works as well. Because the food that we take, how our brain is working at that particular point, or the messages that are sent to our brain, that can influence as well how that fuel is therefore used. And maybe one example that I might share, Rennie, that I was listening to this morning was when a podcast was talking about cramping. And they were talking about pickle juice and how pickle juice might affect how the body handles cramping. And it's nothing to do with the pickle juice delivering an incredible amount of electrolytes that will stop the cramping take place, which is what most people think. Oh, I need to get electrolytes in to stop cramping. It's actually to do with a signal in the brain because of the intense flavor of the pickle juice that, if you like, distracts the brain and stops it from initiating that cramping method because it's focused elsewhere. And that's why mindset and the messages that the brain receives can influence how we're using that fuel as well.
Yeah, and that's it's huge area, right? But we all know there's a psychological link between how we eat, and definitely the more stress and anxiety and stuff, the more we want comfort foods or foods that we associate with comfort or sugar, especially because sugar has a role in lowering, stress hormones as well. But at a much more kind of interesting, it's years ago, I remember that study that where when runners could just rinse their mouth, and I think it was actually Lucozade or something along those lines, they still got the same benefit as if they'd actually drunk the sugar. And that is a big clue that maybe it's not the sugar, necessarily, certainly not as the main thing. Back then, the thinking was, well, it's because the brain actually puts on the brakes because it thinks there's a risk that it'll run out of a steady supply of glucose for itself, as in because the brain runs primarily on glucose. And if it can see just by gargling, it's like, oh, there is glucose available, even though you spit it out, it doesn't put on the brakes. So definitely mindset in many different scenarios seems to modulate how you can access energy. So it's not just what you consume and how. Now, it may be that we are actually underestimating the role of nocebo and placebo. Because they are so powerful, those effects, that it could be that a huge part of how what you take in, the benefit it gives, is because you believe it works. That's definitely an area that needs to be looked at a lot more.
Renan, give us some practical tips for people who are maybe preparing for, and listen, it could be for a short 10K race late in August, September. It could be for one of the bigger races like an Eco Trail towards the end of September. Give us some practical tips for how people might make these choices over the rest of the summer months. I know Barry Murray shifted towards the Vespa model in later in his career. You can maybe tell us about that as well. But how should people go about trying to implement this carb or fat fueled approach over the summer months?
Yeah, so you can actually probably, I think he gave input, Barry, to the Vespa model. So Vespa, they produce, I think it's a product derived from Hornets or something, something like that. But basically, they did do a very sensible thing as a company and said, let's actually have a full nutritional strategy to go with our product. So you can go read about that on VespaPower.com. I think they have whole books about it. So that'd be one tip, go have a read of that, and there's a lot of intro there. But the basic concept is that you train low to build fat efficiency and you raise high to gain to access performance gains. So it's like a dual fuel strategy, and there's loads of people using that already across all the sports. So you could start by trying just your zone 1 to 2 runs, fasted or low carb, and then you use your carbs only before high intensity key efforts. But the same as always, otherwise, anything you want to do on race day, including, let's say if you want to do a big ultra eventually without carbs, because maybe you'll suffer a lot from GI issues, right? There's a big, big issue in ultras. And you find maybe the best way to solve that. Like, I have a guy actually, I was training there, who was down in a hot race. And what happened to him has happened many times. Once it got really warm, after 4 hours, he couldn't eat anything. And that happens all the time. And it may be easier actually for us to try and fat adapt him so he doesn't need to eat than try to solve the heat problem. So that could be a classical example where you might want to see, can I move myself across? So it's something you just need to track how you feel. I used to do it when early in the winter I would go out and I would kind of run without anything except maybe a cup of tea until I felt kind of weak. And then I wouldn't run too much beyond that. And I would try over a few weeks to notice if it was feeling easier. And if it was feeling easier and I started getting faster, which actually generally tended to happen, I would conclude I was getting the right adaptations that I wanted. So I was able to run more independently of fuel, you could say, or on my own reserves, which was the goal at that time of the year. So that would be the way to do it. If that doesn't happen and you within 1 or 2 runs where you start, you just feel worse and worse, and maybe you're wiped out for 2 days after, it's probably a sign there's something else going on with your body or with your lifestyle that means this is too stressful for you. And that's kind of, I think, what we wanted to get into in the last part of this part here.
Well, tell us, your last topic in this particular theme that you wanted to touch on was about the body not so much being a furnace that's burning fuel, every time we go for a run, whether it's fat based or whether it's carb based, but the body is actually a battery. What do you mean by that?
So something comes from a guy called Gilbert Ling, who was a very famous cellular biologist from, he was Chinese American. And he's basically saying that cells are organized charge systems. And that means energy is not created by breaking down food to produce ATP. He says energy is released from the relaxation of what he called a polarized structured system, like a discharge of a battery. Now that sounds really technical. So as you say, it's like looking between the difference of a furnace model, where the food is like firewood you put into the furnace. So you burn that and you get the heat, the energy. But in a battery model, the body's already charged with energy. So the energy is already there. And exercise is about releasing that stored charge that you have, in a way that makes sense. So in that view of the body, ATP isn't actually the energy. So the ATP you get from the food, it's just a switch that lets that stored energy come out. So that means when you eat during exercise, you're not actually creating energy from scratch. You're just helping the battery basically hold the structure that it needs to continue to release energy. So basically, food supports that, you could call it the coherence of that system. It's not coal that you're chugging into a steam engine, right? So it means sugar, for instance, would be a way to boost electron flow from that battery. So it's, and that means then, in effect, that if you have poor sleep or chronic stress, you eat too many processed foods, you're always sitting with electromagnetic signals all around you, or you're always living indoors, all these things that we know is not great for the way the body works. They would say, a guy like Gilbert Ling would say, your body is basically in a state of disorder or discoherence. And in that state, the body wants a lot of sugar because it's not in an optimal state. So it needs that quick electron flow to keep the battery pumping because it's the only energy path it can access. So all the deeper systems are basically kind of offline. So in that sense, you would say, you as the athlete, you have to think, my body's not a fuel tank. I actually have to, use good exposure to natural light, good clean water, eating more healthy fats, breathing techniques, anti-stress techniques, to make sure that, first of all, the battery is set up properly. Okay, so this is all emerging, and there's a lot of other things like Jared Pollack's work we talked about on the Structured Water podcast, and there's a lot of studies in what's called redox biology and in placebo studies that would actually back this up. So it's not mainstream, but it could be a theory that would resolve a lot of the contradictions in what we could call the battery model, or that are resolved, sorry, by the battery model versus the furnace model.
And I think what I'm taking from that, Rennie, is, and we touched on it a couple of minutes ago, when, if we're living in a fairly stress-free environment, we'll just make those better fueling, i.e., nutrition choices, won't we? And we'll also be in a much better place to go out and train and perform because our overall body battery, if you like, can't perform better. Can produce better energy input because we're not being attacked by stress hormones all throughout the day and for various different reasons. So nearly regardless of what fuel is going in, we'll be in a better place to enjoy a run, to do a better session because the body battery will be more relaxed. Now, obviously, we will need the fuel with good nutrition at some stage, but we'll make better choices and we might not need as much. For example, I'm sure we've all been there where maybe we're having a really bad day and instead of just one plate of pasta, which is absolutely fine, we're a bit stressed out, we don't feel full yet, so we go for two plates of pasta, which in the moment feel great, but 10 minutes later we're feeling sluggish and heavy, which therefore our next training session probably won't go that well. So it's amazing how it's not just the food, it's the food choices, the timing choices, and what's all going on around us as well. Not so much fat based or carb based, it's that holistic approach. It's so important, Rennie, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think we are going to have a resolution of, oh, should you be fat adapted or carb adapted? I think that's actually the wrong question, you know, because what we can see is there are contradictions, and that's actually the reason we even want to discuss, well, do we need to change the paradigm? And that's usually how all the big changes happen, is that people start to notice that the current paradigm for explaining something, in this case, performance nutrition, that there are too many contradictions observed in the real world that it doesn't seem to be able to explain fully. So at that time, you need to figure out, do we need a better paradigm? And for instance, this idea that we're a battery could answer, you know, six or five questions that a lot of people have. So one is, why some perform better, fasted or low carb? So it could be not because they lack fuel, but it's because their bodies are more efficient, because their systems are more coherent. Okay, that could be the reason why you can be hurt by overfueling. That's because excessive carbohydrate intake can destabilize what's called redox balance. Okay, that has to do with electron flow. That causes fatigue or gut issues, even when there's lots of fuel in your system. It also explains the whole placebos and mouth rinses. Why would they work? You know, so that means neural signals coming from your beliefs may unlock stored energy in, you know, your body battery. Why do some elites thrive with minimal supplementations? Well, it's probably because their systems are deeply coherent from their lifestyle and training and very metabolically flexible. And why do you bulk despite having enough calories? Because that's actually something people have observed as well. And that could be because your system is in what's called, it's in disarray. You could say it's incoherent. So the fuel is there, but you cannot release the charge from the battery because it's, you know, it's not working properly anymore. It's because it wasn't set up properly. There's too many other things messing it up, you know, like stress and stuff like that. So it's just kind of a starting point, but I'd like people maybe to take that away and say, well, maybe that's why there's these two camps that sometimes are fighting each other. But we can actually probably find a synthesis that brings both ideas together.
And maybe just one final tip from myself, Rennie, with this, and this is a trap that I fell into as well, that when I was experimenting with doing lots of my runs fasted, because as like it's very practical, isn't it? It's very comfortable just to get up in the morning and not to worry about breakfast and then going back to bed maybe for an hour or two, letting your bowl of porridge digest, then going out for your run. It's actually really efficient, isn't it? Just to get up out of bed, you know, quick kind of walk around the house, bit of coffee maybe, and out the door you go. But then you just have to be careful that as easy as that is to do, as we mentioned over the course of the conversation, there will be maybe sessions where you do need that energy intake on board. You know, you might be doing a hard hill session or even a race, and we can easily fall into the trap of, oh, well, the 3 or 4 fasted days, they're working and it's great. I'll try this on my hard days as well, because I can just get up out of bed and get straight in and do my 10 by 2 minutes on the hill, or do my 40-minute tempo runs on the hill. But be very, very careful with that, especially in the early stages. If you are going down a particular approach and you do want to try and become that fat adapted athlete, be very, very careful, because you could burn out very, very quickly just for the sake of it being more comfortable and easier for you to do a hard session fasted like you've been doing the rest of the week. So just to be wary of things like that, Rennie, I think as well.
Yeah, you need to tune into what your body needs every day. And of course, you have to build some awareness, you know, because some of the things that you're like, oh, I need it, is not stuff you need. It's things you're addicted to, you know. So that's one piece of it. But also, it's about noticing all the things you would notice for your training. You know, how did I sleep? What's my mental state? How does my body feel during my warm up? You know, is my heart rate unusually high? Is my digestion a bit off today? You know, all of this will tell you what you should eat today. You know, and it really shows maybe a much bigger problem that too many of us have, is that we live too habitually sometimes. You know, that we just, you know, sometimes I wake up and I don't feel like the breakfast we need, and then I end up eating it because everybody else is eating it. You know, and it's just because I sit at the table, but really, half an hour later, I'm like, I wish I hadn't eaten breakfast today, because I actually just would have felt a bit easier inside. So I kind of, you know, it was just habit, and I ignored that maybe my body was telling me this morning, give it a rest, you know, I'll wait until lunch. So that's probably a big, big part of it. You know, we all need to be more embodied, which is, by the way, a topic I want to cover maybe later in the summer. Yeah, which is something about embodied interval training. So that's one people can look forward to.
Super. Okay, Rennie, that was a really enjoyable, I think really helpful chat about training smart, fueling smart, and enjoying all of our runs as much as we can. Rennie, thanks a million. If anybody wants to get in touch, they can get you on Running Coach Ireland. Rennie, thanks a million.
My pleasure, all. Talk to you.
Time for our special guest this week, and today we have one of the most talented runners on the Irish mountain running scene at the moment, a gent, a scholar, and one hell of an athlete. Enjoy the listen, everybody. Jared Martin, thanks a million for coming on to the podcast, Jared. I think you first came on my radar last year with such a fantastic performance in the European Championships, leading the Irish team home. And I'm sure you're looking forward to having maybe a similar type of run in the World Championships this September. Jared, congratulations on making the team again. And I'm sure you're very, very excited at the minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much for having me, Owen. And yeah, exactly as you said, delighted to be back in the team. This time, I guess, in a couple of teams and we can deliver a couple of good performances this September.
Doing the double in September. Well, Jared, maybe before we talk about the lead up to the World Championships, because I would love to talk to you maybe in a few moments about your training in the 12 weeks leading up to September. But just so, you know, myself and the listeners get to know you, I don't know if it's fair to say that you burst onto the scene there last summer in the trial race and leading the Irish team home. But I know you have been on the mountains before as a junior cross-country runner. You were at the trial race before you made the team, I think, as well, a couple of years ago. But maybe just, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, your running background, leading up to that moment when you made the Irish team.
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose I started running properly, I would say, when I was about maybe about 16 years old. So that was back in about 2017 now. And I'd always been very sporty, but I'd done other sports. I think what maybe pushed me into running was I used to play rugby, funnily enough, but I got to about 15, 16 and wasn't really the build for it anymore relative to everyone else. So suddenly I had quite a bit more free time once I stopped doing that. And gradually running filled the void. And I think I suppose I was always quite interested in the idea of mountain running, because I had been thankfully exposed to the mountains since I was very young, by my dad largely, who would take me hiking in the moors and other places. So it was kind of a bit of a natural progression once I got into running. I made my first appearance for a Northern Ireland junior team in 2018, I think, at the World Youth Cup. And then a year later, I was in the Irish junior team in Zermatt in 2019. And that, you know, by that time, I think I was very much hooked. So I guess, you know, I maybe burst onto the scene a bit last year in that sense. But from my perspective, I've been kind of gradually chipping away at things for quite a few years.
Yeah, fantastic. Jared, talk to us about your running experiences away from the mountains before we come back to the mountains again. You know, when you're not getting ready for trial races and European World Championships from a junior level into the senior level, what type of races do you enjoy in non-championship international season? Are you cross country and road, or are you on the mountains all winter long? And maybe tell us about maybe some of your top performances outside of the trial races and running for Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say my year in general is probably split into cross country in the winter months and mountain running in the summer months. I love cross country, and I think it prepares me really well for the mountains in the summer. So really from about October to March, let's say, that will be my focus. For the last 5 years, I've been, well, studying at Oxford over in England. So I've been very much immersed in the university setup over there. So a lot of my important races are framed around the university season, if you like, things like British Championships, British University Championships and other big races like that. And so I've been lucky enough to be in a couple of medal winning teams there. And so yeah, I love the cross country. I made my first appearance for Northern Ireland in cross country earlier this year at Intercounties, and was I think the fourth scorer in the team, and we got the team gold medal in for the first time in 30 years, I think. So, you know, talking of performances, that would be one that ranks really highly for me in terms of runs that I'm proud of. And then, you know, I'll do a bit of road throughout the year. I often find that for many people on the street, if you like, it's your road times that they will judge you on. So
Yeah.
I am keen to try and, you know, work on my 5Ks and other distances. I do Armagh 5K every year, and I think I ran 14:36 earlier this
Okay.
year. So
Very good.
try and, you know, stay reasonably sharp on the road, even if it's not my favorite bit of running, if you like.
Yeah. Did you jump into the London Marathon, Jared, as well? Because I was trying to just do a bit of research
Yes.
beforehand, and I did come across an American hurdler and American shot putter on World Athletics with the same name as yourself. And then I
Yeah.
did see Jared Martin, I think a 2-hour 40 London Marathon. I
Yeah.
was wondering, was that you maybe just having a little bit of fun, maybe, or were you actually going all in with it?
Yeah, so yeah, that is me. That's the same person. Yeah, I realized this season with Worlds being in late September and trials being a bit later, I saw that there was a bit of a just a sort of opening in the season. My last cross country race was early March, so I was just, I don't know, a bit kind of curious to see what marathon training would be like, to what running a marathon would be like, and so I took my cross country fitness into that, but had a decent block of marathon training, and you know, I was kind of fascinated by it, something different. On the day, I was hoping to go, I was hoping to go sub 225, which is
Yeah.
kind of specific, but that's the kind of university benchmark, if you like, to get recognized for a really good run, if you like. So, but on the day, I went through, got to about 30K on course for that, but then just, I don't know if it was the heat or just the intensity of it, but I got quite painful stomach cramps, and it was just a matter of survival from that point on. But
But you're still young, Jared, are you? Are
yeah, no,
you
it's,
20?
yeah, I'm 23, so very, very
Okay.
much still young, but
Yeah.
just kind of did it out of curiosity. I don't think I can confidently say I won't be doing another one for several years, but kind
Yeah.
of glad I've seen what all the fuss is about now, if you like.
I remember when I did my first marathon when I was just starting off, like as a total novice runner, my coach at the time from my farm said to me, "Oh, do the marathon, get out of your system, and then we'll make a proper runner out of you." So
Yeah, I kind of
out
felt like
of
that a
your
bit.
system.
It's
Now,
out of
you're
my
already a
system
proper
now.
runner, in fairness, but I suspect when you might go back to it in 5 or 6 years' time,
Yes.
yeah, you'll be up there in those low 220s, no doubt about it, Jared. You mentioned earlier you're studying over in Oxford. Tell us a little bit about that. It's not often that we have Oxford University students on the podcast. I did see what you study. It looks fascinating. Maybe just tell us what you're studying and what cross country life is like as a University Oxford athlete. I'm sure it's brilliant fun over the course of the winter and early spring season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I would say it's the setup over there has been excellent for me. And I would really point to it in terms of explaining, you know, my progression over the last few years. I'm actually just finished up there now. So I did 5 years there. Firstly, a bachelor's degree in history and politics, and then stayed on for a 2-year master's in modern Middle Eastern studies with Arabic. So I've just finished up with that, and that's, you know, I love the studying, but I think maybe the best thing about it has been the running on the side. There's been a really good club set up there, with, you know, a really good level of support, I think, and especially for someone like me. I think if I'd gone to some of the really, really top universities, I think particularly when I was for running, that is, particularly when I was arriving, I feel like I maybe could have fallen through the cracks a little bit, whereas got a lot of support and attention from the coach at Oxford and from the whole setup there, and just a really good squad of people similar to me, and also, you know, people that are better than me. We've been lucky enough this year to have a really strong squad and also some really good experienced runners. I think the biggest name that we've got this year is Jared Ward, another Jared, but he's, you know, like a 209 marathon runner,
Wow.
sixth at the Rio Olympics, proper professional athlete. And so just having people like that around who are willing to impart their experiences and advice, it's, you kind of just feed off that. And yeah, I've found it a really good environment to thrive as a runner.
Yeah, it's great to have people like that to train with. Is it similar to the US, Jared, where, you know, when you're on the collegiate US cross country teams, there is an official coach, there's a big structural support behind you. Is it the same in Oxford as well, where you have a, you know, an official cross country coach, you've got maybe access to a physio, nutrition, structured training sessions and so on? Does it have that full structured package to it?
Yeah, so I would say to an extent, yes, but probably with a lot less money behind it is how I would summarize it. We have a really good coach called Matt Seddon, who's kind of taken me under his wing for the last few years. And yes, for the kind of performance athletes, there is nutrition provision, sports psychology provision, physio provision, strength and conditioning. So it is there. I would say though that yeah, it's probably. I know from friends who maybe gone over to the US or experienced that system, there I think there is just a lot more money in it. So for example, our coach is someone that, you know, we just as members of the cross country club, you know, our subs go towards paying him largely rather than him being like a, you know, paid up employee of the university. I think the nice flip side of that is that there is an awful lot of initiative left to students to just organize things and run things, and it's not, you know, I suppose this goes a bit beyond just the training part of running, but you know, I've been club captain of the club and been really involved in that organizational side of things, and you really are just, you know, doing it by yourselves as students, and I think that's been, I think, just as a way of gaining those soft life skills, if you like, a really good bonus from the whole thing.
Yeah, and then great to be able to bring all of that into the Irish squad over the next couple of weeks as well and share all those experiences. Jared, just to leave the running aside for a second, have you been called upon over the last couple of weeks, given your expertise, your study expertise, given what's going on in the Middle Eastern part of the world? Have you been called into the BBC studios or anything like that to give your insight into what's happening?
No, not yet, not yet, I'm afraid, Owen, but no, it's a good, I guess, sort of any dinner time conversation or any event I'm at, if you say what I study, it's I definitely will get a lot of questions from people about what's going on and so forth. And yes, it's nice, I guess, to study something where for often quite unfortunate reasons, you don't have to justify its relevance or its importance to people. It's there in the news for every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, so let's get back to the running, Darren. That fantastic performance last year, where you led the Irish team home in the European Championships, I'm sure that must have been a very, very proud day. You've had some great results, have you said, as you've said, including that really fast 14:36 in Armagh. But I'm sure to lead the Irish boys home that year, and that was a really good team as well, with Kitty Mooney, John Kinsella, Matt McConnell as well. So to fly the flag that day, I'm sure you must have been a very, very proud man, coming first Irishman home, and I think about 40th overall, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. That was obviously my senior debut, and I suppose I didn't know exactly how what to expect or exactly how I would measure up against the other guys, but yeah, I had a really good run. I was really happy with it. I don't think it was a coincidence. You know, I'd been really kind of gearing my season around trying to peak for that race. And I think it just, yeah, it suited me well. It was a really wet and mucky course, which is not often what you expect going out to, you know, France in the middle of June or whenever it was. But I think that really played to my cross country strengths, and I
Yeah.
just, yeah, was delighted with the run. And yeah, always nice to kind of lead your country home at something like that.
Yeah, and you must have taken so much confidence from it. The year must have gone so well for you, Jared, over the last 12 months, because when it came to the trial races a couple of weeks ago, you decided to do the two trial
Yes.
races, to go for the short course, the uphill only, and then the classic up and down. And that does take, a lot of planning. It takes a lot of confidence in your body's ability to perform very, very well over what a 3 day period back to back. So was that an interesting choice for you? An exciting choice for you? A difficult choice for you to make, to put go for the two and not just focus on one and making sure that you got one team, but you're
Yes.
feeling strong enough with the year that, yeah, actually I'm going to go for the two here. I'm going to make the two teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was I suppose I'd done the one last year and I felt all right with that, and I guess I was looking ahead to Europeans, and I know that I think there's a couple of rest days between, and I guess I just thought it was doable. And I was well I did the Trofeo Nasico series of races over in Italy in late May, and it's back to back races Saturday and Sunday, and the Saturday is a vertical kilometer, so I really kind of I took that as my test, if you like, to see how I would fare over back to back races. And it was, I guess, in that sense, fine. I actually had a much better run on the Sunday than the Saturday, so I took that as, evidence that I could hack it on the Friday and on the Sunday. And I guess I was just keen to do both because, well, a couple of reasons. Firstly, I think I am still trying to figure out a little bit what my best thing is. I used to think I was more of a descender and so would go for the up and down races, but recently I've kind of found that I'm doing a little bit better in the uphill parts of races. So I guess partly that I'm still trying to hone in exactly what my niche is, and maybe that is changing over time. And then the other thing was, I guess I'm just keen at a world championships for the Irish teams to be as strong as they possibly can be. And if that entails me running two races rather than one, I'm perfectly happy with that, if that's what gets us to the best team results.
You're happy with the trial races themselves, Jared. 2 second places. They went according to plan. No major drama.
Yeah, no, I'm happy enough. I think the Friday race went off very, very hard, probably a bit harder than I was expecting, and it was just a little bit of a case of clinging on at the end. But I think, yeah, my fitness was there, so that wasn't too much of an issue. And then Sunday, I guess, was quite nice in a sense to know that I had the Friday race and, a good safe second place banked. I could just kind of relax into it a little bit more, do it on my own terms a bit more, without being so nervous. And yeah, to come away with it with two kind of very, very solid performances, was exactly what I was hoping for.
Fantastic. Jared, talk to us about the next 12 weeks. The trial race was about what, 3, 4 weeks ago now. But 12 weeks to go. And I'd love to just get a little bit of insight into what that 12 weeks looks for you. To obviously peak, in September, wearing the Irish gear and lovely Irish gear as well. Adidas are the team sponsor at the moment. So some beautiful Irish gear to look forward to wearing in September, which always helps. What will the next 12 weeks look like? Did you go back to a base period post trial and then slowly move towards that race specific work as you get into August, or how are you going about it?
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of a challenging one, in the sense that, I mean, on the one hand, it's lovely to have such a long period of time knowing that you're in the team before the race, but I think it introduces an extra little level of complexity in ensuring that you peak at the right time, because you have, such a large amount of time to play with. So I think in my head, and it's something that I will be discussing in a good level of detail, I think, with my coach in the coming weeks. So he'll obviously have impact there. But as I see it, I think I'll probably be endeavoring to kind of almost have two peaks. And when I say that, I mean that I think the trial itself, coming out of London and that kind of side project, the trial itself was relatively early for me. And I suppose I'm envisaging myself hopefully peaking for maybe around the Snowdon race, late July, that kind of period, and peaking for the first time then. And then I think it's maybe a case of, taking it down a little bit after that, recovering, and then building back up again towards that real key date in late September. So in broad brushstrokes, that's how I kind of envisage things going. I suppose in terms of more specific things that I hope to kind of do in the next 12 weeks to help with that. I think there's a few things I am keen to. I definitely respond really well to racing and to good high quality races if I, don't do too many of them. So I'm gonna do the Snowdon race, and I'm keen to hope maybe do the Fleda Trail in Italy at the beginning of August,
Okay.
just to give myself that practice. Again, another chance to practice back-to-back races, and also just mixing it with really high quality people, I think is really useful for me going towards worlds. Other things, I guess I'm keen to get into the mountains a bit more, because up to now, being based in Oxford, I'm getting fit for the hills without really having any direct exposure to mountains, and I do notice that in races sometimes, just in the more technical bits where I'm maybe not quite as confident as I'd like to be. And then hopefully, I'm lucky enough to have quite a bit of free time now over the summer. So if I can manage it, it would be brilliant to maybe get out to Canfranc before the big week of races, and suss out the courses and see what to expect a bit more. So yeah, that's my agenda, I think, looking ahead.
What are your key mountain specific sessions, Jared, that you do? Or maybe in the lead up to the trial race, because as you said, you didn't have
Yes.
access to the mountains, maybe you were just doing, 1K reps on the flat. But what are your key sessions, even at the moment, as you're getting ready towards Snowdon? Is it, 10 by 2 minutes on the hills? Is it 30-minute tempo runs? What are your key quality sessions that you're doing?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a mix. I suppose if I look at the past couple of weeks, I'll do a mix of, I mean, part of the thing for me is just trying to get elevation in my legs, because that's sometimes that's been the challenge at university. So it's a little bit, it's not the most exciting thing, but I will just do kind of fairly moderate intensity runs on a treadmill at like 10 to 15% gradient for an hour or so. So that's one thing, which is a bit, definitely not as fun as being out in the mountains, but it does do its job. And then yeah, in terms of more mountain specific sessions, one recent one would be like just a fairly solid sort of 10 by 3 minute uphill reps, fairly decent intensity jogging back down. My favorite mountain specific session I've ever done, and I love replicating this, it especially for up and down races, is to, I find this quite a brutal one, but I'll get the race distance. So let's say I think Worlds up and down is about 14K. So I'll do 1 kilometer uphill at race pace or close to, then about a minute's recovery at the top, then a downhill rep, then a minute recovery at the bottom, and basically do that until I reach race distance. So that's my kind of real crucial session, if you like, that I'll do a few weeks out to really test the fitness. But always, yeah, always feel pretty wrecked at the end of it.
Your long runs, Jared, do you tend to cap them at, say, the 2 hour mark, or will you go beyond that in the lead up to September?
Yeah, so I would say a 2 hour mark's probably about right. I wouldn't generally be going really beyond that. Yeah, usually it's, yeah, hour and a half to 2 hours, something in that ballpark. Yeah.
Maybe, Jared, just a final question or two from me to round up the interview.
Yeah,
You
no problem.
you're shown there in the interview, Jared, that you're so successful on cross country, road, have represented Northern Ireland, Ireland, leading the charge there last year. Apart from the sessions themselves, Jared, are there any maybe two or three key elements to your success that we can share with the listeners? That are, some of the reasons why you stay healthy, you perform well consistently, anything from a scientific point of view, anything from a holistic point of view, that has helped you perform so well and given you that range of 14, 36, and 5K to cross country, superb performances and leading the Irish team home there last summer. Anything spring to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of things. The first is you mentioned that word holistic there, and I do try to really think about success or I guess, performance in running as being a very holistic process. So, obviously there's always the tendency to focus on sessions and the actual running bit, but I always think that for me, the most important way of continuing to improve in running and race well is to avoid injury. It kind of sounds really simple, but I think often people miss that out. And I really do think the secret to any success that I've had in the last year or so largely comes from the fact that I've essentially been training well at a good high intensity and running well for about 5 or 6 years continuously without any real injury bother whatsoever. And so I think that comes from a more sort of holistic approach. Thinking about my nutrition, strength and conditioning. I'll do strength work in the gym, at least a couple of times a week, and just kind of, eat sleep as well, things like that, and just really trying to, I suppose, focus on a fairly balanced lifestyle, to maximize performance in running. And yeah, I think just kind of it sounds quite simple, but just I guess trying to be patient with running is the other thing. I think sometimes people are especially when they find themselves in a bit of form, are really keen just to go and go and go and keep ramping up the intensity. And I think my coach has really helped with that, just to kind of almost have a bit of self-restraint and maybe accept the trajectory of sort of modest, continuous gains rather than really spectacular ones, because I think ultimately that's the more sustainable path to getting to getting to a really good and successful place.
Yeah, patience and consistency. It's so important, Jared, isn't it? Give your coach a shout out there. He seems to be doing a very, very good job. Who is
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm massively grateful to Matt Seddon. He's brilliant coach. I think he won Coach of the Year at our University Sports Awards there, and very, very well deserved. And yeah, no, I think he knows it, but I'm immensely grateful for all his help.
A final one, Jared, for me. So you mentioned the University Sports Awards there. Are you finishing up now in Oxford, and will you be looking for a job come September, or how are you fixed from that point?
Yeah, so yes, this is me done. I'm just waiting on results now. But yes, finished at uni. So I'm lucky enough to have a kind of consulting job offer, but it doesn't start until next February. So I'm looking forward to
Very
having
good.
several months of running and enjoying myself, and maybe doing a bit of traveling in the winter, with that nice and insurance of knowing that there is a job sitting there.
Excellent. Well, listen, Jared, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Best
Yeah,
of luck to
likewise.
yourself and all the Irish team that are listening, maybe as well, in the build up to the World Championships in 12 weeks' time. Hopefully, you'll have just as good a result as last year, if not better, Jared. Thanks a million for coming on, and all the very best in the build up to the World Champs.
All right, thank you so much for having me, Owen. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, there we have it, guys. Hopefully, you enjoyed the chat there with Jared. And I actually realized as we were talking through the chat that Jared and I were actually in the same Irish squad back in 2019 at the European Championships in Zermatt when Jared was just a junior, myself on the senior team. So really nice to connect again. On a separate note, if anybody is running in Val d'Aran by UTMB this weekend coming, do make sure to pop over and say hello, as I'll be on microphone duty there at the start, at the finish line from Thursday to Sunday. And if not there, guys, we'll chat on the airwaves again over the next week or two. Until next time, everybody, don't forget to pop over to Patreon if you can for €3 a month to help keep the show going. Everyone, get your running gear on. Let's go.